Before we jump into today's show, I just have a quick message for you all. I just have received so many emails from you about the Smithsonian Associates content and how much you enjoy it. Smithsonian is thrilled too and is giving you an exclusive offer. Please know, though, I'm not doing this for payment. The entire discount is passed along to you by generosity of Smithsonian Associates. I think that's really important. Smithsonian Associates is offering a special discount to Not Old Better listeners to save $20. I mean, to save $20. That's a lot. To save $20 on a ticket, call the number 202-633-3030, 202-633-3030. That'll be posted on the website, of course, and use the promo code 232100, 232100. The offer is valid on ticket orders, including Smithsonian sleepovers, everybody, including Smithsonian sleepovers. So if you're a grandparent out there and you've got your grandchild over this summer and you're looking for something cool to do, check out the SmithsonianSleepovers.org page for some really wonderful night at the museum kinds of activities to do. This is just fantastic for our audience, but the offer is valid on ticket orders, again, including Smithsonian sleepovers through August 31st. So everybody, again, promo code 232100, 232100, and call Smithsonian at 202-633-3030. I think you guys are just going to love this. I think this is really a neat thing that Smithsonian's doing, so please enjoy. Welcome to the Not Old Better Show. I'm your host, Paul Vogelsang. As part of our Smithsonian Associates Art of Living series, my guest today, Dr. John White, is a popular physician and writer who's been communicating to the public about health issues for nearly two decades. Dr. White, an MD who still sees patients, is probably best known in his role at the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, where he works closely with healthcare professionals, patients, patient advocates, and others involved in the use of medicines and educational programming for both a medical and a lay audience.
So I want folks to know what they don't know, and then to figure out where do you go for good sources of information, and how do you figure out the good, the bad, and the ugly.
That, of course, was our guest today, Dr. John White, author of the new book, AARP New American Diet, Lose Weight and Live Longer, and who's appearing at the Smithsonian Associates, August 3rd, 2017, at the Ripley Center in Washington, D.C., join me in welcoming to the Not Old Better Show, Dr. John White. Well, Dr. John White, thank you so much for joining the program today.
Thank you, Paul, for having me.
It is going to be fascinating to see and hear you. I'll be there Thursday, August 3rd at the Ripley Center. You're going to talk about a lot of stuff regard to the nutritional IQ. So describe what it means, you know, to have kind of a nutritional IQ. Tell us about that first, and then we'll jump into kind of the good, the bad, all the other stuff around nutrition these days.
Sure. You know, there's a lot of misinformation out there about food and what we eat. I mean, one day coffee is good, the next day coffee is bad, and then the next day coffee is good again. You know, do we eat eggs? Don't we eat eggs? And even if you're trying, it's hard to truly figure out where do you get good information. Because the reality is, more and more, we need to make the connection between what we eat and how healthy we are. That, you know, in many ways, when we used to hear you are what you eat, it's true. And the more we realize that, we understand how food really is medicine. So I want folks to know what they don't know, and then to figure out where do you go for good sources of information, and how do you figure out the good, the bad, and the ugly as it relates to nutrition.
Well, let's talk about the good and the bad, because What does it mean to have good fat and bad fat in particular foods, and will one, the good, hopefully offset the other, the bad?
Yeah, and this is one of those areas where there's been conflicting information over time. And it's only been recently where there's been a greater appreciation that the cholesterol in food probably doesn't really matter that much as we think about high cholesterol. But here are really the skinny on fats, if you will. You know, there are really three different or four different types of fats. There are the unsaturated fats, which are what we call the monounsaturated and polyunsaturated fats. And those are things like avocado, fatty fish, nuts and seeds, you know, peanut oil, sesame oil, olive oil. And they're the good fats. And that's important because historically, we all thought that fat was the enemy and that we would eat a low-fat diet and that would make us healthy. And the reality is that isn't true because so many low-fat products contain a lot of sugar. So the monounsaturated and polyunsaturated fats are the good fats because they lower bad cholesterol and that lowers our risk of heart attacks and strokes. And then there's the bad fats, which are the saturated fats, and they raise the bad cholesterol levels, which is the LDL or VLDL. And that's a challenge because they increase the risk of heart attack and strokes. So those are things like butter, you know, cheese, red meat, you know, beef, pork, chicken. That doesn't mean that you don't eat any of them, but it's a recognition that you want to lower, you know, the saturated fats that we consume. And then there's the trans fats, which we're trying to remove from products. And those are often in some baked goods or obviously in fried foods and those things that we see partially hydrogenated oils that you might see if you read the label. That's not good. And the reason why is they lower our good cholesterol and they raise the bad cholesterol. And there's lots of data that shows they increase the risk of type 2 diabetes.
Well, you know, let's drill down into kind of some of this good and bad. Coconuts, for example, are they're kind of nutritional bright spots today, and fads are common in the nutritional areas. Should we trust that coconut oil is kind of on the good side, the plus side, and are coconut supplements valuable to us? Why is that?
You know, I like to tell patients that if they're thinking coconut water is the way to good health, that they're barking up the wrong palm tree. And the reason why I say that is I remember years ago where coconut water kind of was the fad, that, you know, it's a way to replace added nutrients. The challenge is it often contains a lot of sugar, and coconuts in general have fat, and it's usually the bad fat, and it raises LDL. And even though it might have some nutrients such as potassium, you can get as much potassium from a banana as you can from coconut water. So I'm not a big fan, first of all, of coconut water, because I feel regular water is always a better way to go. And the reason why is I want to really minimize the amount of added sugar that we drink. So I'm not a big fan of coconut water, partly for that reason. You know, in general, and you're right, there's a lot of talk about coconuts lately. But again, they are sourced, they're roughly 80% saturated fat. And there's some controversy as to whether the type of chains of fats that they're primarily composed of do raise cholesterol. But most of the data shows that because they're saturated fat, they still raise the bad cholesterol levels, which is the LDL. So, you know, coconuts are not going to be the way to go. And that goes to your point about there's always a fad, and I'm trying to get people to think it's not about the latest fad. It's about what makes sense and what's backed by data. And the data don't support coconuts.
My audience, of course, is very concerned and is thinking all the time about longevity and brain science. And you read and you hear, and I recently saw this on CBS Evening News, that coffee is considered helpful for longevity. Is that something that we should trust?
Yeah. You know, I mentioned at the beginning whether coffee's good, whether it's bad. And, you know, the reality is coffee does have a lot of perks. And the study that you referenced was actually two very large studies that looked at over 500,000 people, primarily in Europe, over 16 years. And what they found is that folks that drank about 4 to 5 cups of coffee a day lived longer than those who drank none. Typically, they decreased the death rate, you know, by 12 to 18%. And the data have been pretty consistent. And in the last few years about some health benefits of coffee, including, as you talked about, in reducing the incidence of dementia, reducing the incidence of Parkinson's disease, and maybe even preventing type 2 diabetes. And it's important to know it's not just the caffeine. We think of always caffeine in coffee. You know, there's really 800 different chemicals in coffee, and there's a lot of what we call polyphenols, antioxidants that reduce, you know, free radicals. And in some ways, it sounds like, you know, is radical a bad thing? It typically is. In our brains and in our blood vessels, they can cause clots. So if we can consume food or drinks that reduce that, that's a good thing. But here's the catch that I tell patients. Remember, I mentioned the studies were mostly done in Europe. You know, coffee there is, remember those cups that we might have with a saucer, they're not the venti coffees that have, you know, 4 to 5 cups, which is your serving for the day. You know, it's a much smaller cup. And the data's on freshly brewed coffee. It's not on the frappuccinos, the cappuccinos, the mochaccinos, the venti lattes. You know, just regular good old coffee. You know, I drink coffee, and I tell my patients, you know, it's okay as long as we keep it really to about 3 to 4 cups a day. You know, that translates into about 300 to 400 milligrams of caffeine over the course of the day. So, you know, if we have high blood pressure, we want to keep that in mind. But in general, at that range, there's really very little impact on our health. So, you know, coffee is something that is okay. You know, it's been around for centuries. I'm a big fan of it. There's some of your listeners may, you know, remember Winston Churchill, and Lady Astor had this great quote that she said to Winston Churchill that, you know, if she were his wife, that she would give him coffee, which at that time was felt to be somewhat poisonous, and he'd say, if she were his wife, he would drink it. Anyway, you know, coffee has this great theme and literature and over the centuries. So go ahead and drink that coffee, and hopefully no one will have poisoned it. I think it's okay. So coffee's good, and I'm confident of that.
Well, we're going to talk a little bit about your new book in just a second, but tell us about the kind of the breadth of resources that are out there, and particularly the ones where we can trust the data coming from those resources, because there's just so much. It's just this deluge, this tsunami of nutritional information. Where do we find the right stuff?
Right. And you know, the National Institutes of Health have a website, which is great when you search for things such as, you know, calcium and osteoporosis or vitamin D or healthy dieting. It really is a great source of information. Sometimes the information may not always be worded best for consumers, but in general, it's very good. And the reason why I say that is because they always include a notation of when the data was listed on there. So if you're looking at something 5 years old when it comes to nutrition, you might want to look at another source. But their information typically is within a year on the site, which is good. Another place that does that is WebMD. And what I like about them is they say on their website when it was reviewed and who reviewed it. So there's some confidence that somebody's actually looking at this, because, you know, I try to avoid those sites that might be promoting a certain food product. And that's why I think folks at NIH and the Department of Health and Human Services are overall a pretty good site to go to. But again, it's important to think, you know, what has been the breadth of data over, you know, the last decade or so? And you're kind of jumping the gun, but what I would tell you is that there are some common themes that we need to think about. And one of those is it's as important what you include as well as what you exclude. So, you know, I like to joke that, you know, people will, you know, go and, you know, order, you know, a hamburger or a cheeseburger, you know, French fries, and then they'll order a Diet Coke, as if somehow that makes it all magic and gets rid of all those other calories. It's the totality, you know, of what we eat, those things that we include in our diet and those things that we exclude. And unfortunately, as Americans, we don't include a lot of things that we should include, which is fish. you know, that's probably number one. And I hear from patients all the time that they don't, there's a fear sometimes of how to cook fish, that they're not sure how to do it, they're not sure which ones to get, they're overly concerned about mercury, it seems like it takes a long time, and you know, all of those are things that we can overcome. It, and what's so great about it is it has those good fats that I referenced, those monounsaturated and polyunsaturated fats. You know, it's low in calories, and it really contains important nutrients. You know, that's probably the biggest. You know, we don't eat enough vegetables. We all know that. We don't eat enough whole grains. You know, we're very low in the consumption of fruit. And then something we often overlooked is nuts, because people feel, well, they have fat, and they have, you know, a lot of calories. But that can make them a good snack, because they have those, again, those good fats, those monounsaturated fats and polyunsaturated fats, and they help us feel full. So if you eat a handful of nuts, that's always going to be better, no matter what, than, you know, eating potato chips. I mean, and that's assuming that the nuts aren't, you know, covered in chocolate, unless it's dark chocolate. But that's a whole other discussion.
We are with Dr. John White. Dr. White is an MD. He is going to be at the Smithsonian Associates Program Thursday, August 3rd, 2017 at the Ripley Center. Dr. White's subject is Boost Your Nutritional IQ. Dr. White, your new book, AARP New American Diet, Lose Weight, Live Longer, is getting excellent reviews. I had a chance to look it over. Yep. Tell us, would you qualify this as a diet book per se, or a reference source as part of that data that we were just kind of referring to? Is it really kind of both?
You know, it's really both. It's a diet book, but it's trying to help you think about diet as a noun rather than a verb. And by that, I mean so many people are like, I have to diet, and using it as something they have to do. And this is about something that you have to live on, that you're going to be comfortable with doing for the rest of your life. You know, what I tell patients, you know, as we get older, if we did everything the same as we did at age of 25, we would still gain weight. And the reason why is that our basal metabolic rate, kind of our internal furnace, slows down as we get older. So we would automatically gain weight. So we need to do things that are going to help us lose weight. And it's primarily based on what we eat. So that's why it's so important to educate ourselves. And, you know, I tell folks, because everybody wants to lose 10 pounds this summer, or lose, you know, 15 pounds before wedding. And I try to get people to think, it's not about where you're going to be in terms of your weight 2 months from now. It's where you're going to be in terms of your weight 5 years from now. Because most people are going to gain weight. So even if you just lost, you know, 2 to 4 pounds a year, you know, in 5 years, that could be 10 to 20 pounds. That'd be great, because most people have gained 10 to 20 pounds instead of losing 20 pounds. But no one really seems to want to do that. They want that kind of immediate fix. So the book really is about, again, trying to create that association between what you put in your mouth and how long you will live and what you die of, because there are more and more data that really shows how food impacts our health, especially as it relates to cancer, as it relates to heart disease and strokes and diabetes. The data are incontrovertible. They're consistent, and it shows time and time again we really are what we eat.
You're an advocate of this idea of what we eat and eating right, but you also are someone who has advocated on behalf of exercise. And I read an article by you talking very specifically about the prescription of exercise by physicians, by MDs. I think that's just almost, it just makes such good sense. Why doesn't it happen more?
Sure. And it's really both. You know, it really is about what we eat as well as about, you know, exercising. But I will tell you, we lose more weight by reducing the types of foods that we eat in terms of the calorie content than the amount of exercise that we do. But exercise has many health benefits, including, you know, increasing bone density, you know, strengthening us to prevent falls as we get older, and other things like that. But people have lots of misconceptions as to when they get on that treadmill, they're going to burn, you know, 700 calories. And that's just not, you know, how it works. You know, I think physicians typically have not learned about either nutrition or exercise. They don't fully understand the health benefits of exercise. They themselves typically don't exercise like a lot of other people, and I just think they minimize the importance of it. And that's unfortunate, because time and time again, just as good nutrition, being active helps us to reduce those things I just mentioned, diabetes, heart attack, cancer. It helps to reduce depression. And I try to also help people to think it's not about going to the gym. As soon as I say exercise, people are thinking, they got to, be pushing weight and doing squats and, hurling barbells around. It's not about that. And I love it when patients tell me they need to get in shape before they can go exercise. Somehow, they need to look right to go. It's not. It's about, being active throughout the day. And I wish more and more of my colleagues would write that prescription, because I think if we talk to patients, and we don't do enough of that, but if we talk to patients about how important being active is, they would make those changes, especially if we give them ideas. And I think that's, again, part of the problem. People think they need to go to the gym, or they don't know what they need to do, or there's a fear that they don't want to get hurt. So that's part of the challenge too, but it is definitely about both of them, about eating healthy, and being active. And, I often think about, we all talk about how busy we are, and, I'm the same. But do we ever really regret when we went out and took a nice walk, or those times when we do go to gym? Do we ever say, oh, I wish I hadn't done that? Well, we always feel good after that, and we believe, it releases endorphins, but we typically don't say, wow, I wish I didn't, go exercise a while. But we might say, oh, wow, I wish I didn't eat that, burrito, or, 20-ounce steak. We think about that later in the evening or the day.
Well, Dr. John White, it is just a pleasure to be talking with you. You're going to be at the Ripley Center August 3rd, 2017. There's going to be handouts, great nutritional information. There's going to be a quiz, too. There is going to be a quiz, Dr. White, and I'm going to give you a chance to quiz me. If you've got a couple more minutes, maybe give me a three-question quiz. We'll see how I do with this. And,
I'm going to give you some hard ones.
Okay.
All right. And we have not talked about it.
No. There's been no pre-screening here at all.
Yeah. But you know what? I'll start with an easy one.
Okay.
So is a tomato a fruit or a vegetable?
Tomato is a fruit.
It is. Why?
Tomato is a fruit because it is, it has, I got to remember this from my own, it's been a little bit of time here, Dr. White. I believe it has the same properties, the same color properties as a red apple, and so it's considered part of that kind of variety. Is that close to being accurate?
It's close. It has seeds. That's a big issue.
Okay.
And the way that it's grown as well. So, for instance, is a peanut, this is going to be half a question, is a peanut a nut or something else?
I think it's something else. I think a peanut is actually a vegetable.
It's a legume. Remember the word
it's
legume? We'll save that for another discussion.
It's
not a nut. It's not a nut, and that's important when we think often about food allergies. But here's a good one, because, I'm always trying to encourage people to try different types of fruit and to eat fruit. So here, I'm pushing that, and then you go into your supermarket. How do you tell, Paul, if a pineapple is ripe?
I think a pineapple can be squeezed, somewhat like a...
pineapple. That's kind of hard to squeeze it.
Yeah. So it's not.
It could get hurt. It's kind of pokey sometimes.
Okay. Yeah. So I'm off on. I don't think I've even gotten one for three here, Dr. White.
Okay. Well, the tomato is a fruit.
Good.
You actually smell the bottom of a pineapple because most fruits have a sweet smell when they're ripe. So it's actually called the butt of the pineapple. So it should be fragrant, and that's how you know that it's ripe. If it has no smell, then it's not ready.
How about one more question? Give me one more here, and we'll see how I do in this last one. Yeah. This is the big clinker here.
So is celery a negative calorie food? By that I mean, can you actually lose weight by having to crunch and chew celery?
Yeah, I'm going to answer yes on that, because I think the celery has a high water content, high fiber content, so it's one of those positives, I think.
And that would be nice, because we eat celery all day and lose weight, but it doesn't. A stalk of celery has about 6 calories that we consume by eating it, but it actually only takes 1 calorie to digest it. So it's a good point in that there are no magic pills or celery stalks that will help us, you know, lose weight.
Well, Dr. John White, that was fascinating. I promise you I won't edit any of that out. We're going to go with the kind of the blistering attack of Paul there.
it was meant to be hard.
It was a good one, Dr. White. And your session will be a great one. And yes, absolutely. All my audience will enjoy this. Again, Dr. John White. White is W-H-Y-T-E, the author of the AARP New American Diet Lose Weight book. At the Ripley Center, August 3rd, 2017. Dr. John White, thanks so much for joining us today on the Not All Better Show.
Thank you, Paul.
Really.
Thanks for being a good sport.
Absolutely. Thanks, Dr. White. And thanks to our guest today, Dr. John White, and the Smithsonian Associates for all the help with the podcast. And as usual, we'll post links to everything. And also, as usual, my thanks to you, the listeners, for joining me today. Your time is valuable, and I'm grateful you're spending some of it with us today. I'm always interested in your feedback, and you can leave that at iTunes, Google Play, Facebook, or send me an email at info@notold-better.com. Join us next time for our show about the great new movie, Dunkirk. So enjoy. Thanks, everybody.